Where do athletes find inspiration and passion? It seems today's sporting culture does more and more to stifle this passion in today's athletes. I think there's a lot of lack of breaks in the sports schedule. We've got crazy sports parents on the sideline, and we've got coaches who demand more and more of our athletes. Yet at the end of the day, parents and coaches, we want intrinsically motivated and passionate athletes, not just ones who show up because they feel they have to, or we don't want athletes that show up that dreading to do the work. Today, we've got two very high-performing athletes in the podcast who are very passionate about sports, but they're also world-class water polo players. Chris Pinciaroli and her daughter Alyssa are joining us on the podcast, and Chris is a former professional water polo player who turned bank executive. She's the founder of We Team Now, a human development consultancy that works to mentor organizational teams in the field of high performance and positive psychology. She's also the wife and mother to three girls, one of whom will be joining us today. Chris has quite the resume in water polo as an athlete. She captained the women's Brazilian water polo team for 15 years, capturing a bronze medal at the Pan American Games in Winnipeg in 1999. And at one point, she was elected one of the seven best players in the world. She also represented the Italian national team and played professionally in Italy, winning both local championships and the European Interclub Championship. Recently, she published Sport, A Stage for Life, How to Connect with the Touchstones of Elite Performance and Fulfillment. Her daughter, Alyssa, plays water polo at Stanford, and she'll be sharing her perspective from time to time throughout this conversation. Now, in part one, we're going to dive into what we can do as coaches and parents to create inspiration in athletes. In our conversation here, you know, you're talking about three generations of high-performance athletes in the sport of water polo, and they're going to share their magic sauce. And in the second part of our conversation, we're going to discuss how to support high-performance athletes with rest, recovery, and support their mental health. You know, what can parents and coaches do to support these athletes who are still inspired or who are starting to burn out? Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm your host, JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. The mission of this podcast is to help you become a better leader and build a better culture. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which provides one-on-one coaching and consulting for leaders. Learn more about us at tocculture.com. This episode is brought to you by the TOC newsletter. Every Thursday, our newsletter includes two things you don't want to miss out on. Firstly, the notes to that week's podcast episode. Whether you're listening while driving the car, out for a run, or doing the dishes, we don't want you to miss the biggest takeaways from each episode. Secondly, each newsletter is a short article from myself or Nate on leadership and culture. These articles are designed to inspire, encourage, and provide practical insights into leadership and culture building. Our content is a perfect fit for anyone who wants to stay up to date with the latest trends and insights in culture building. You can subscribe to the newsletter at tocculture.com or by clicking on the link in the details of each episode.
Well, Chris, it's great to have you with us here on the podcast and good to see your face again. It's been a couple of years since we shared a training together back in Portland, Oregon, and JP being there also. So it's awesome to have you back here. And just to get our listeners, you know, a little bit more aware of kind of your background. You grew up in a high performance athletic family in the sport of water polo. You've participated on multiple Olympic teams here. After your retirement, you kind of got into the professional world for a little bit. Now you've turned back to the sporting world here. And I'm just curious to get us started here. What is it that has brought you back and wanting to give back kind of to the athletic community?
I was born in a high-performance setting. My father is an Olympic player. I heard whenever a person went to the Olympic Games, you never talk in the past, you talk in the present. So he went to Tokyo 1964 and Mexico 1968, and he used to play water polo. And by that time, water polo was only a men's sport. But nevertheless, he never let me out of the conversations. I am the oldest daughter. I have two younger brothers. And he always used his sport to teach us about teamwork, about importance of fair play, of the culture. I think he exemplifies a lot in our daily routine through his sport what he wants to create, the foundations for life. So this inspired me. Later on, I became a pioneer in women's water polo in Brazil, the captain of women's water polo team for 13 years. I played professionally for 4 years in Italy. After my water polo career, I was chosen after my third world championship among the 7 best in the world. And all these skills that I learned from sport, it helped me to become a better executive. I went to the financial market industry. I worked for a Brazilian bank for 23 years. I was transferred to the United States. Nowadays, I live in Miami to be head of human resources. This helped me to be a better mom. And then when I left the organizational world, I started to get in touch with my calling again, because I've always been passionate. What takes people into the high-performance mode? How they can realize their best selves? But I started seeing a lot of burnout. And it was very strong on me when I saw one of my daughter's colleagues in high school who committed suicide. So this was something like a wake-up call. How we can do something for the not only youth, for all the population, that when we talk about high performance, we can see athletes, executives, parents, kids going into burnout, and sometimes unbearable one. So that's when I met the science of happiness. And nowadays, it takes me working with sports and organizations how to foster, yes, high performance, but bringing wellness along the way.
Chris, I appreciate so much about your story and journey. And we're going to jump into in a few minutes here, just that very topic that you're so passionate about around balance and burnout and how to foster that with young athletes today. But before we do that, I want to kind of come back to something you mentioned there, is just that fact of you being a pioneer in women's sport and specifically water polo. Can you tell us a little bit about just some of the challenges of being a female athlete at that time period, you know, and what you kind of, some of the things you did to kind of overcome some of those obstacles along the way? Because, you know, that's something we definitely don't highlight enough on this podcast, if I'm honest, is the challenges of being a female athlete.
Yes. I've always been a swimmer. The ocean, the sea was a place that we were always there as a family during the weekends, a way to connect us. But I never was a high-performance swimmer. I was a swimmer because I liked to do the water sport. But when we started seeing developing the world in some countries, such as the United States, Eastern Europe, Italy, the women's water polo is something that started calling our attention in São Paulo and in Rio, especially a club called Flamengo. So it was both teams starting doing a group of swimmers, of ballerinas. Many ballerinas came into water polo. And then we started playing. And the first challenge was to defend a time for us in the pool so we could practice. Because everyone thought, a lot of men especially, thought would be a joke having women playing that. So it was a breaking a paradigm. First in our club with our should be our colleagues, the men's team. But soon they started seeing that it was a different sport. It was still water polo, but completely different way, the skill sets with that. And how we started organizing with family, parents to have the first time the money to travel, to go overseas. So it was step by steps, but always having a dream to develop something new, breaking a lot of paradigms regarding this. When we were able to attract attention from the media, this helped us so much to explain. The media was a huge way to leverage our sport, our communication, to attract more supporters, sponsors, so we could travel. And then we had a female director who happened to be my mom, who became the first women's water polo director. And she started organizing with other parents all the basis for this sport to flourish would take us to the United States. We found a very good coach in the United States who supported us to develop. And everyone, all these key players, started talking about the dream of being an Olympian sport. Because men's water polo is the first team sport, together with soccer, to participate in the modern Olympic Games. It was 1900 in Paris. And the women's water polo just happened in 2000 in Sydney, one century after the men's. And the Eastern Europe saw women's water polo as we would take it out their attention. They wouldn't be so strong to be a macho sport. But then we had to do a lot of work with media all over the world. And finally, our dream came true when we entered the Olympic Games.
We're really lucky. We've got your daughter, Alyssa, here also on the podcast. And I want to turn to her and ask her a question here on her experience, because she's now playing water polo for Stanford. And so she's kind of grown up in her own, you know, high performance environment as well with you as parents. You know, Alyssa, you obviously have a passion for water polo. You've pursued it at a high level here now. You know, where did that inspiration come from you, and what role did your mother play in that?
I think water polo wasn't my main sport growing up until we moved to Miami. It was something I always had in the back of my mind, but my mom never imposed for me to do it. And I also used to swim in Brazil when we lived there in São Paulo. I loved swimming. It was something that I was very passionate about. But when I moved here, I realized that I only liked it because I had my friends. And now that I got to Miami, it was something that I wasn't as passionate about. And that's when I decided to join water polo. And when I got into it, it was something that just came very natural for me. And like my mom mentioned, the DNA, I could definitely feel it. But it wasn't something that she pushed me to do. It was more of a natural side that I had to experience for myself. And I think that's super important, because it's not like she's, it's something that she always loved. And I know she wanted that for me as well, but she didn't want to force me into it. It was something that I found my passion, like, for my own.
Chris, as a mother, I'm curious about this question, because you've kind of been in both shoes as the daughter of a high performance parent, and then being parented, you know, and the things you talk in the book about, the many lessons that you learned from your father, you know, kind of growing up in that way, and now being the parent of a high performance athlete. What are some of the things that you've tried to do for your daughter that your dad did for you? And are there some things maybe that you learned from your experience as an athlete that you decided to do maybe a little bit differently as a parent?
Yes, Nate, this is something very interesting when we think about it, because you can read all the books about parenting, about how to foster the right connections into developing your best selves, your potential, and realizing your potential. But sometimes when you are there, you still commit something, some faults that you say, how did I do that? But it's so important when you acknowledge that. I remember when I arrived here in the United States and Alyssa was called for her first tournament in Miami in water polo. And when I arrived, I could feel the energy of the place. I was ready to play. It was my environment. You know, I was walking. I started walking more straight, more energized. I was ready to get into the water. And then I look at Alyssa, and Alyssa was still, I think, 12 years old, very young, and she was almost shrinking. She was like, Mom, I'm so afraid. And I wasn't even noticing Alyssa, because I was in the high performance mode to be there. So this was something, and I read a lot how you cannot put all your expectation in your kids. And the most important thing is how you need to listen and to realize what they are going through. Because at that time, it wasn't about myself anymore, that it became very natural to get into that peak performing state of mind, but how I could support her moving into the direction that she wanted in sport.
Alyssa, I'm curious from your perspective, because we don't often get athletes on the podcast, especially sitting next to their sports parents, but what is something or a few things that you feel like your parents did right in terms of just helping to, you know, support you through the process of growing in the sport?
Yeah, I think something that they always emphasized on is the importance of balancing. They always told me that school came first, no matter what, no matter how into like water polo I am, no matter how much I want to keep practicing, they're always telling me to get my priorities about school first, which is something that is very important now for me, especially studying at Stanford. And other things are just like my mom mentioned, also being there in the moment. I think during a game and seeing my parents looking up for me, like cheering and like making the eye contact, definitely always gave me like a boost of energy and helping me focus on, okay, now it's game time. And my mom was always very present for me, and that's something I'm very grateful about. Especially now being six hours away in a plane ride, I know she always, whenever we have a game, she would always be texting me. She's always there for me, and something that I'm very excited for this year also, because we won two national championships and we're going to try to go for a third. And seeing my mom in the stands is definitely something that I'm looking forward to.
It's really beautiful to hear that. And I think as a parent, I hear, read your book, Chris, and I hear Alyssa talking there. And sometimes I get a little concerned because, you know, you, as you mentioned earlier, the burnout and the pressure. And I'm afraid of showing any interest at all, you know, because if I'm showing interest or passion, then they're going to feel the pressure to perform for me. So I'm curious, Chris, I'll start with you from your perspective and your approach. What did you really try to do to focus on, you know, helping Alyssa to, and your other children to manage those pressure and expectations? Here she has expectation almost on her now to go win an international championship in water polo, right? You know, but just all throughout her career, how have you helped your children to manage the pressure and the expectations and that burnout?
I remember, JP, let me put it, I saw a survey here in the United States. How come there was being so much drop-off for the youth up to 13 years old? How come they were dropping off from sport? And they couldn't find anything from this survey. Then they went other way around. The people who was still playing after 13 years old, what did they have there? And the answer was, number one reason was to have fun. I think the three of us studied about this case. So this was something that I really connected when I was working or trying to bring sport into my children's life, bringing this aspect of fun. And it doesn't mean that you are not pushed, you don't go through difficult moments, hardships, when you are yelled at, but always trying to bring this aspect of whenever you go on a weekend to a 4 hours practice, you can say, oh my gosh, I'm losing my weekend, I'm wasting my weekend. But how you can go with a positive way to create these positive memories. So this was key for me. The same way I had my positive memories with my parents on the beach, with my brothers, doing sport as a way to connect our family, I wanted to do here as well. And for me, it was very important because when we were in a traditional school in Brazil, they called me, the director, saying that Alyssa was very hyper, and she couldn't concentrate at school. And we took her to a doctor. He did all sort of tests. And he said, look, Alyssa, she's fine, but there is this medicine that would be very positive to her. And over here, I respect sometimes medicines are necessary. But for her case, we asked why, if everything is okay, why are you suggesting? Oh, because she can concentrate better if she takes that. And we said, well, she plays, she swims, And they said, well, we go in trial and error to try to find the dose. And I remember our decision was not to give her anything because they said it was a matter of the brain being developed. When we moved to the United States, she entered in a smaller school and they ran an assessment with her. They saw that she learns much better when she moves. And actually she arrived at home. She said, Mom, I finally understood why you make me write everything, because you learn writing, but I don't learn like this. I need to move. So she started having her schedule. Whenever every 45 minutes, she needs to stand up and move. And whenever I was in Brazil, I would be upset with her and I would tell her, you won't go to practice today, because I knew she loved practice. If you don't study, you won't go to practice. But I was doing the worst thing. If she wouldn't move, she wouldn't concentrate. So these things, JP, was very important observing from our own experience in sport, studying the science of human being, human potential, but to see what your children, your colleague is going through and adjust the better way to motivate something that they want.
Alyssa, I really empathize with you. I was the same way. You know, in my case, you know, my parents weren't as informed enough and they did put me on medicine. And it was years later that I learned that exercise is the solution for my ADHD. And I now, if I'm driving my wife crazy, she just tells me to go running. She's like, get out of here, go for a run or something like that. So it's really awesome what you did for her there, Chris. I'm curious, Alyssa, you know, your mom was talking about how sport was something that was fun for her and her family. When you look back at your experiences around sport, and that includes your family, what are some of your fondest memories? What was the most fun you guys had as a family together?
I think, going to the island, whenever we lived in Brazil, I used to get picked up out of school on Fridays, and then we would drive 4 hours and get to the island, which was a magical place for me growing up. And there I used to do all sorts of activities with the ocean. That's where I learned how to wakeboard at like 10 years old, 9 years old. And I used to connect a lot with my dad because he spearfishes. And I used to go spearfishing with him. It's funny because my friends always make fun of me. I have a picture of me with an octopus, very little, and I put it in my head. And they're like, the octopus girl. But I used to catch octopus together, octopi. But it was something that connected me with sports as well as nature. And that's something that I'm so grateful with. And I still feel like I have that connection. And bike rides always. So something that brought our family together as well. And moving here to the U.S., that's something I missed a lot in terms of going to my little getaway for the weekend. But we found those things, and we found our happiness other ways as well. Living in Miami, we were fortunate enough to have the ocean also very nearby. And so it was something that we could enjoy for the weekend. And bike was always a big part of our life as well. So going on Sunday bike rides to the market, and it was always emphasizing the sports in some way or another.
Chris, you mentioned kind of in the opener here how in your work with high-performing athletes and high-performing cultures, you notice that there's some pushback or some resistance to the conversation about balance and about really paying attention to, you know, the human needs of the athlete that is playing the sport. And I wonder, what's your prescription for that? You know, for coaches and parents that are facing all these pressures to continually practice and continually invest and to continually train, how do they sort of monitor, you know, the health and wellness mentally, emotionally, physically of their athlete or their daughter or their son, and be able to make decisions that are still best for them without necessarily compromising, you know, that performance aspect?
Nate, this is a great topic. And I still see we have a lot of room to work on that. Because what I've seen many times, coaches, want to have parents away. When I was doing a research for my book, I asked many coaches, so how parents can help. They said, being away, being far away. And I remember Alice's coach, I asked him to do a work together, said, Chris, we don't talk with parents. It's a policy here. And something I was so angry, I understood his perspective, but I work with that. Let me help. As I had, for instance, in Brazil, my mom being part of directors of women's water polo. My father was the toughest coach that I ever had for myself. So this is something that I see, Nate, a great opportunity for us to sit on a table and to share roles and responsibilities, to do a type of mutual agreement. What coaches' roles are, which are very different from parents, what they need. Parents, not to interfere in the coach, not interfere why your daughter's not getting more playing time or being out of when she's yelled at, but how they can support in the emotional aspect, in getting stronger physically, in emphasizing the sleep, the eating, all the rituals that they can re-energize, how they can have an active role on that, and how the athlete can contribute as well. So one of the best workshops that I make, that I love, is when we bring parents, coaches, and athletes working together to organize this mutual agreement. It's an opportunity to share these responsibilities, because as a mom, I saw sometimes the parents can be very strong. The pressure they put in their kids when they are playing, especially when they know the game, they want to get in there and almost play with them. I went through that as well. So it's how we create this environment on this, because we are not paying enough attention, Nate and JP, to the indicators that are showing the mental illness. It's growing, not just in number, anxiety, suicide ratios, depression, it's decreasing in age. We need to do something different. All of us, we're having a calling on this. And in sport, it's very important, this mindset, pushing to the limit, getting more. I want champions. If you're not ready, go to the bench. I have 20 others to bring up. This is something that's very cruel. And what can do to athletes and in life in general.
One of the things there you kind of mentioned was, you know, this energy and this burnout, and the parents and the coaches, you know, they're kind of working together. In your book, you talk about the four types of energy and different ways to recover those four types of energy. And I thought that was really, really great, because I know a lot of coaches that I work with, the athletes are like, hey, we need a break. And that's great. But then the athletes take a break. Is it a break just from the sport, or is it actually like they need sleep, or they eat right, because then they give them a break and they're not doing those things. So I was curious if you could share, you know, the four types of energy and what coaches and parents could partner on, because I think that has to be a partnership, especially when the athlete is not at, you know, on the court or on the field or in the pool, and they're at home. Like, you obviously want the parent to be working with the coach on that. So
certainly. And I think it's very important here, JP, when you talk, there are some universal truths, some cultural truths, and some personal ones. So when we talk, when we study the science of happiness, there are a lot of things that we can learn from research, but then there is the research, how you can try it and raise the level of acknowledge on ourselves, on an athlete. So when we talk about recovery energy, there are those things that you can do right away to recover your energy. For instance, Alisa was sharing that one of her colleagues from Stanford, she has a great voice. And when she sings, it's something that she feels relaxed. She feels passionate about. It's like it's a small time during the day. Even if you do 15 minutes, she can feel her energy level taking care, you know, raising again. And she was saying, there is no way, I don't have time for singing. I have the water polo practice, I have to study, I have all these things, And sometimes when you want to bring more wellness and take care of our energy level, you cannot wait for the next vacation, even for the next weekend. Sometimes you don't have it, and you don't need to stop practicing. How you can fill your days with, let's say, 15 minutes of an activity in the nature or something you're passionate about, like singing, like getting an instrument, playing a song, that those small things help out. These are like your islands of sanity that you can take during the day, those breaks that you need, like a timeout that can help you recharge. So these are things that you can do in the immediate surrounds right away. The second thing is there are some midway short terms that you can recover your energy as well, is the importance of sleep. Sometimes we take it for granted, this, but it's very important. All the science shows the importance of sleeping. And especially in the university environment, high-performance athletes, they use a lot their nights away studying. I think all of us have done that. But how it impacts your performance, not only in the next day, how you function. And we are even adults. How hard it is. You say, come on, I cannot think straight. So the importance of sleeping, teaching them about the importance of eating, what you should eat in the morning, between breaks, at night, what it can teach you about the supplements. So these are the short-term ways to recover energy as well. Then there are the mid-terms, how you can, the importance of getting a weekend. For instance, at Stanford, they have only Tuesdays are their free times. The weekends, they play during the high season, 6 hours, Saturday and Sundays.
Yeah.
Sunday is like when they practice the most. But how you can create those rights. Tuesday is her free time. What she can do for this free time to really recover and organize for the week. And then the importance of vacation, going away, being out. The kids, they do a lot of summer jobs during the vacation. But it's important to have a break also. In our case, going to Brazil, seeing our family, especially being the nature, these type of things help a lot in recovering the energy.
All right, that's it for today's episode. One of my biggest takeaways from our conversation is that we just got to go out there and create some positive experiences as a family with our kids in sports. So get out there, have some fun, enjoy your time doing a variety of activities. Next week, we're going to be back to discuss how to support high-performance athletes with rest, recovery, and mental health, what parents and coaches can do to support these athletes who are either still inspired or who they're starting to burn out. In the meantime, check out Chris's book, Sport: A Stage for Life. It's the most comprehensive book I've read for sports parents. This episode is brought to you by the Culture System Online Training Platform. It's the ultimate resource for coaches who want to become more transformational and build winning team cultures. Whether you're just starting out or looking to take your coaching to the next level, our one-of-a-kind online training platform is designed to help you learn the culture system framework at your own pace. Through this course, I'll share with you the proven methods, tools, and strategies used by some of the best teams and organizations in the world. You'll get access to customizable digital tools and a group chat to engage with experienced coaches and apply the four-part framework throughout your season. With the Culture System Online Training, you'll be inspired and transformed through the stories and lessons of real leaders who have successfully applied these methods and tools within their organizations. You'll gain a deeper commitment to transformational coaching and be equipped with the tools and strategies you need to build a great team culture. To get access to this course today, simply go to tocculture.com and click on the online course tab, or click on the link provided in the details of this episode. Don't miss this opportunity to become a more transformational coach and take your team to the next level with the Culture System Online Training Platform. All right, that's it for today's episode of the Coaching Culture Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, we're grateful for people who take 15 to 30 seconds just to leave us a review. And I know your friends appreciate it when you send them an episode that they find valuable. So don't hesitate to share today's episode.